Welcome to the Future of Supply Chain. Each episode, we bring together leaders across the supply chain space to discuss the role of technology and business model innovation on the future of supply chain. The Future of Supply Chain podcast is presented by Dynamo. Dynamo is a pre-seed and seed stage supply chain investor. To learn more about Dynamo and this show, head over to www.dynamo.vc/podcasts or subscribe on the platform of your choice. Now let's get into the show. Here's our host, Santosh Sankar.
Hey, ladies and gents, welcome back to the Future Supply Chain Podcast. I'm your host, Santosh Sankar. Joining me today is Drew Herpich, Chief Commercial Officer of TIHC and the Nolan Transportation Group. Welcome, Drew.
How are we doing today?
We are doing well, and I'm excited to have you on. I'd love to just level set here and ask you for an overview of TIHC and Nolan Transportation Group before we dig in.
Yeah, no, absolutely. Appreciate you having us on today. You know, TI brings over, you know, multiple decades of multimodal expertise, right? We're a top 10 logistics provider out there today. We've got over 15,000 shippers in our ecosystem and 80,000 carriers. And so we're one of the largest, you know, logistics companies out there. What we're really proud of is the proprietary system Beyond Digital Logistics platform that we just launched last year, but really how we're moving forward into the big thing that we are, you know, pitching out there is our port to porch offering, everything from that, you know, first mile in the drayage move all the way to the final mile in reach of your porch.
Amazing. And I guess before we move on, what's the Drew Herpich story? How did you get into the wild, wonderful world of supply chain, as I call it?
No, it's a great question. You know, I always joke around with our training classes and I look at them all the time and say, did all of you dream about being a freight broker one day? And then, of course, the answer is similar to mine is no, right? And so the story really behind me is I came out of college, went to Western Michigan University, had a job in Detroit and had a job in Chicago. And I remember talking to a friend and colleague and my cousin as well. The job in Chicago was Coyote Logistics that was founded by Jeff Silver and Mary Ann Silver. And basically, he said to me, he's like, hey, listen, this guy, you know, figured it out somehow with American Backhaulers back in the day. He's doing the same thing again with Coyote. It was a smart decision on my end. Like back in the company ended up going out of business 3 months later. So that's how I got into this world. And like most people in the transportation world, once you're in it, it is very tough to get out of it.
Indeed. And so, you know, your current role, you're the chief commercial officer. And in your former role at Coyote, you also led carrier sales. So I'd be curious, I'm going to kind of jump right into the state of the market. How are you kind of thinking through the specific challenges that trucking companies are facing? For a lot of our listeners, I think they are acutely aware that the last 12 to 15 months have been challenging for the industry. So I'd love to kind of hear your take on it.
Yeah, no. And I hate to say it too, I think these next, you know, few months will be challenging as well too, right? And so, you know, from my perspective, I've always been carrier facing. I've always been a capacity type person in this industry. I've been doing this for a little bit over 17 years now. But the one thing that I always do is try to put myself into their shoes, right? I don't have a CDL. I've never drove it, but I've been around it enough now to understand the experience that they go through on a day-to-day basis, right? How they look at their day-to-day, how it is going into shippers and facilities, how it is being on the road, sometimes 7 days a week and through the days like that. But the one thing that I'm very particular for is how we take care of our carriers. On the flip side, to your point, is how we're looking at this economy, how things are shaping up, how interest rates and everything like that can be affecting them. Yes, it's taking a toll on our drivers and carriers. And the one thing that we were looking at the other day is just the operating costs in general, right? The one thing that we always try to understand from a 3PL perspective, what does that operating cost look like for a driver? And before 2020, it was much different. And after 2020, it's been much different. You think about everything from insurance premiums to the cost of the driver, to the cost of the truck, to the cost of the trailer, right? You know, a trailer, you know, a few years back, you could get for 15, 20 grand. You can't get the trailer out there for less than 60, 80 grand right now. So the thing that we're thinking about is how that looks on the day-to-day for not only the carrier, but for the driver and them having to be able to obviously make their operation go.
Do you kind of have a list of, you know, 3 to 4 best practices, considerations for success that you know, call it small, mid-sized carriers should consider as they look to endure, not just through this market, right, but through cycles? Because I think that's what has historically challenged the asset folks, is they tend to overbuild in good times, and you tend to feel the pain as a result during bad times, so to speak.
Yeah, you know, it's funny when you say that, though. It's not just carriers. It's all of us individually, right? You know, I think about it today with even the stock market and the economy. And so I think to your point there, or the question of what are a few strategies, you know, the first one I'd say is just building a really consistent relationship with your 3PL provider, right? Making sure you have a really good point of contact, because it goes exactly what you said. If you don't, you might be playing that spot game. And so I'll take it back to the stock market a little bit. You know, for me personally, I'm a long-term investor. So that means, hey, if I'm happy making 7 to 10% a year, on the flip side of things, when the market's down, I can afford to lose 7 or 10%. But like a lot of my friends and family, they like to play that spot game a little bit. And they like to play that short-term investor game where they can make 20, 30, 40%. On the flip side, though, they can lose 20, 30, 40%. And so my thing always to carriers is, don't play that short-term investor game. Don't play that spot game. Play the more of that contract game. Get more consistent freight. Understand where your revenue is coming from on a consistent basis. And that way you're not waking up every day going, where am I going to get my next load? I think that goes into the second point, which is important, is how you are going to get that. And obviously building relationships with 3PLs is key. But once you've built that relationship, how does that look like from a technology perspective, right? How are you optimizing your day-to-day? How are you optimizing your routes in a week? Are you looking at different things from a dynamic routing perspective to help you have a route for the next 20 days? Those are some of the things that you really need to be able to look at on top of looking at long-term contracts, right? Hey, we can do this project for 6 months. Hey, there's going to be, you know, 1,000 loads for the next year. Those are things that they're going to want to really embrace from a technology aspect and being able to get that freight. And I think the third thing is, once you kind of establish that relationship, you're embracing technology, what does that company have to offer you, right? From a rewards program, right? You know, I always think about, when I think about rewards, I think about Starbucks. And so many times, I can't tell you how many times over the years I've heard somebody say, hey, listen, you know, I've got to go today. I've got my, you know, 10th coffee's free, right? And those are some of the things that we want to be able to do with our carrier, you know, capacity through our Beyond Rewards program, right? So obviously we kicked off our Beyond Rewards program. We're looking to get drivers in there, offering them more freight, having them, you know, a point of contact, them being able to use our systems easier, but then also giving them things, you know, like free, like DriveWise. You know, for example, what DriveWise is really, I think about it from like a flying standpoint, TSA pre-check. Mm-hmm. DriveWise is the same thing, where now these, you know, drivers and these carriers can now bypass these way stations by enrolling into our program. So little things like that, that will just make their day a little bit easier while they're being on the road and delivering our goods on a day-to-day basis.
I love that. So I'm going to kind of stick on this theme of being focused and centered on my team. As we prep for this podcast over the last several months, I have a team member, Anneli, who's been really helpful ensuring that I'm being thoughtful. We're doing our research. And she came across an article from Supply Chain Brain a couple months ago. And you talk about 3,000 truck drivers having lost their jobs, as you've seen both large and small carriers declare bankruptcy. And then that contrasts, or rather equally, is complemented by the ATA talking about a driver shortage of about 80,000, according to their statistics. And part of this underlying discrepancy is the fragmentation of the market. And what you do in part is to kind of move us more to an online platform, providing aggregation. I'd be interested to kind of have you unpack this for us, because people talk about driver shortages, right? You know, consistently in our industry. I'd be curious how you think about perhaps the solution to this, or is this something we just need to understand that we'll cope with for the foreseeable future?
It's one of those things that, you know, to that point, you know, what I said, what Bob said, they're real facts, right? And to that point, too, I think the same people are looking at about 160,000 driver shortfall by 2023, right? And so the driver shortage is always prevalent, right? And I don't think to any time soon it's going to go away. At that same time, though, too, I think you can argue on the other side of things that the goods and packages and product is still getting picked up, right? But I think at that point, though, too, right, you think about the driver age, it's really remained the same, usually around that 55 year of age. But I think the new age driver coming is going to take advantage of it into a different way, right? When I think about, you know, let's think about tracking, right? 5 years ago, it was almost impossible to get any carrier to be able to let you track them. Now you fast forward to 2023, and it's almost a precursor to be able to take a load that you will be digitally tracked, right? And so I think a lot of things was that push and pull of the industry, of where the industry was going to in some of the old school mentality. But now I think a lot of drivers and carriers are looking at it going, wait, this is a way for them to help me actually get more freight in a better way, right? Because some of the things that we do with our Beyond Carrier technology, for example, is if I know you're on a run from Chicago to Atlanta, I don't need for you to get to Atlanta to get unloaded before I offer you that next load. I know exactly where you're going to be. So I'm able to help you now create triangles and quadrilaterals to make your runs be able to get back to your points that you need to, not only for your next load, but maybe for your customer as well too. And so I think that, you know, the more that we unpack this and as we go forward, you know, our industry does have a lot of similarity to the stock market, right? And the same thing in the 90s, right, with E-Trade and things like that coming on board. I think you'll see something similar in our industry. I think you've seen a lot of consolidation. I think you'll see the 20, 21, 22,000 brokers and 3PL out there consolidate over the next 3 or 4 years. And then to that point, what platforms you use, what benefits you're getting from that, those are going to be what really separates the competition from each other as we go forward of how they look at their technology products to be able to assist their carriers to be able to get the freight that they need.
Do you think part of that also is allowing fleet access to also more modern equipment that would attract the younger generation to view driving as something enjoyable? Modern cockpits, you know, connectivity, maybe something more accustomed to how they think about driving around day to day as a consumer, and transitioning kind of some of that enjoyment to the CDL world.
Yeah. I mean, you think about it too, right? I mean, this is the big thing. And as America and as economy, we need this. The number one job in America today is being a driver, right? And so the one thing I don't think we think enough about is how that driver feels on a day-to-day basis, right? How they go about their day, how they actually feel during that day. And that's where we've just got to do a much better job, right? You know, some of the things that we're working at with our customers, we've got over, you know, 15,000 shippers in our NTG and TI network. One of the things that we're working with them on is, you know, how do you become a shipper of choice, right? You know, you think about the things from wait time to having a bathroom, to be able to access vending machines and food, right? These are things that are all real that can really affect not only the cost, but how a driver looks at things, right? And so I think to your point, doing things like modernizing the cockpit, maybe making driving more like a remote control, being able to give them more comfortable times and downtimes so that they're not having to drive, you know, every single day. You try to push the limits to a certain degree because of what they got to provide to their family. And so doing some of those things, I think will make being, you know, a driver a little bit more attractive, because that's what we really need to fuel economy and to fuel America and in the growing years.
And I'd be curious, kind of, what are your thoughts on like autonomy playing a role over some time period in maybe augmenting the workforce, if you would?
Yeah, you know, it's interesting. I was actually at Washington, D.C. about 2 years ago, and I heard somebody speak on this. And basically what he said, it's not a matter of if, it's just when, right? So this is coming to a certain degree. You know, you think about it even from the personal standpoint, right? You know, Tesla, some of these other companies are really pushing the envelope about how it looks from a day-to-day perspective for drivers like us. I think the same thing is happening in the CDL world. I think that the game in the landscape changes, though, a little bit, right? Because what you talk about, I think, is very interesting for a run, like, let's say, you know, from Boise, Idaho to Fargo, North Dakota, right? You know, something like that, right? That's something that will be able to be tangible. Now, the drayage move or the short haul or some of these different things, that's where drivers will still need to be used. And so I think a lot of this will be looked at from long haul versus short haul. I think a lot of it will be looked at from different things from like the port to things going to your doorstep. There's going to be a lot of that in between. But you think about that long truck hole, that's where I see autonomy coming into our space and very quickly, to be honest with you.
Yeah, agreed. And, you know, we have an investment here called Gaddick AI, who's really found their stride and are resonating with customers in that middle mile segment where there's fewer unknown unknowns. You can actually implement autonomy in a sensible way. But I'm going to kind of step forward here. And over the last few quarters, we've spent a lot of time thinking through the broader nearshoring regionalization thesis and what that means for the industry, but also what it means for us as early stage technology investors. And everybody can recognize, I think, whether you're in this industry or not, the headlines have been hot for several quarters around this. And I'd be curious your take, right? Leading kind of commercial efforts, what type of opportunities is this unlocking? What type of things need to be done in order to equally deliver on the commercial opportunities that are being unlocked by this kind of changing tide, if you would, in global supply chain?
Yeah, you know, I think there's a lot of things that are being done. You know, obviously, you know, the whole concept from offshore to nearshore has been, you know, looked at. I think a lot of companies are also looking at, you know, hey, does it make sense to still be manufacturing in China, or do I need to look to another country, or can I do this down in Mexico? I think you're seeing a lot of those things. For us, you know, personally here at TI and NTG, I think the one thing that we look at is if we are going to engage into an offshore, into a nearshore, or work with, you know, companies like that, you know, it is an extension of what we do, right? And so how I look at it is, you know, if we have other, you know, employees in a different part of the country or office or anything like that, right? We make an effort for them to be part of our team, where it's not an outsource or where it's not one of those things that becomes problematic. You know, we look at these individuals as part of our company, as part of the team. Just think about it. You know, we're based here in obviously Atlanta, Georgia, be no different than our office in Charlotte as well. And that's how we look at some of these offshore opportunities, as they are part of the team. But I think the one thing that you're seeing, I guess, more into the economy space and how shippers and customers are looking at their situation. A lot of things changed after COVID, right? You know, I think, you know, a vast majority of shipments just always came into Long Beach or LA. And we've seen a lot of shippers and customers look to change that or do things differently. And I think a main reason of that is what I started off with. Some of these providers got out of China and went different routes. And now that the way that they're looking at their routes or where their ship is coming from, looking for new ports to come into, and then new, obviously, opportunities for different DCs domestically. So we're seeing a big effect on this. I think, obviously, from a, you know, Mexico perspective, we continue to see that grow. I think our cross-border type of freight here in the U.S. is going to continue to grow. We're going to see more and more come through Mexico. But we're excited for some of these opportunities because they can either A, make us more efficient, or B, better with some of our providers that we're working with.
If I may, on that Mexico point, we've been trying to think through a lot of the compliance-oriented aspects of that. Is this an area of opportunity kind of you think exists for the entrepreneurs listening as to streamlining it, aggregating best practices, experts on the subject of, you know, CTPAT, for instance? That's quite an onerous thing to gain certification. And how does all that need to line up as we look to unlock, you know, more active volumes cross-border?
I think to your point, you know, it's a very important question, right? I mean, it's a different ballgame, right? The insurance, the legality piece, how are you paid in pesos or dollars, right? There's so many things in complexity that go in moving cross-border freight. And so the first thing I'd say is make sure you have experts on board. And that's what we've done here, is brought in some people that have had high level of experience, people that have been moving this type of freight for years, that can really help us navigate it, right? You know, one of the things I learned, you know, several years ago when I got into cross-border freight was just how carriers work, right? It's a different culture, right? They, you know, in America, they go online, they fill out a carrier packet, they send it back with email, or maybe they go to your website, boom, it's done. You know, in Mexico is a little bit different, right? We noticed that carriers wanted to come into the office. They wanted to meet face to face before they signed the contract. They wanted to know who they were dealing with. And so understanding all those nuances, whether it be from a legal piece or a culture piece or how the actual freight of flow works, That can be extremely important, right? You know, the one thing I would say to somebody looking to get into these opportunities, you know, make sure you crawl before you walk, right? You know, and so I would say, you know, make sure you get familiar with understanding the trucking landscape, how to run a truck, how to be able to be profitable, how to understand your costs, and then expanding into different areas, like maybe doing cross-border or looking at those different avenues because they're a little bit more complex than most.
Love that. Love that.
So as we wrap up here, you mentioned training at the opening, and I assume part of your trainees before they join the company are likely kind of graduating school and, you know, graduation season approaching. And if you had to give a commencement address to kind of this new generation who are keen to enter our world of supply chain, what advice would you give them?
Well, it's a great question. Well, you know, I'd probably say is if you learn a trade, I would definitely do that right now, right? You know, I remember I had a plumber come over to my house a couple months ago, and he looked at me as he was underneath my sink, and he turns around and looks at me. He goes, "You can't automate this, Drew." So learning a trade or a skill like that would be very beneficial. But no, I think being serious with you as well, you know, and I'm a big believer in this. I tell my training classes all the time, get comfortable trying to say yes to more things that you don't do. Go on more experiences, learn and see different people. You know, I always give the story of Mark Zuckerberg, obviously the CEO of Facebook, but you know, at one point he invited five people over to his dorm room, right? Three of those people are billionaires. The other two are probably kicking themselves in the ass on a daily basis because they didn't go there. And so, you know, figure out a way that you can say yes to more, experience more things, that'll help you be a more rounded person. Second thing I'd probably say to you as well, and I'm a big believer in this, is where I've kind of built my career. You better learn how to sell. I don't care if you're in accounting. I don't care if you're in HR. I don't care if you're a truck driver. I don't care if you're doing a podcast like yourself. You've got to be able to always be selling, right? Because you're always selling something at the end of the day. And so you might not be in the exact, you know, line of sales, or you might not be a commissioned sales rep, but you better be able to understand how to sell yourself and be very confident in your elevator speech, very confident in your introduction. Things like that will help you be a more well-rounded person overall. And you know, if I had to say the last thing, just, you know, challenge yourself, put yourself out there more, put yourself in more uncomfortable situations. One thing that I got big into, and I think it's really a good idea in this day of age that we live in with, you know, social media and everything the way it is with phones. I did this when I moved to Atlanta 12 years ago, and I still try to do it today once in a while. But go to the bar and put your cell phone in your pocket for 2 hours and see what happens. Don't go in there. Don't get that nervous twitch to look at Facebook or LinkedIn or one of your text messages. Keep that phone in your pocket for 2 hours and just see what happens. See the conversations you have. You see how you interact with different people. See how you don't interact with different people. But really put yourself out there in a different light, and you might be surprised by some of the people that you'll meet out there as well too.
Amazing. I love that advice. So a bit about Drew, I'd be curious, is there a consistent practice you have that helps you stay grounded, you know, through good times, bad times, tumultuous times? What do you do?
Well, I've got a phenomenal wife and a 2-year-old as well too. So they keep me very busy, but they are definitely my better half. But for me personally, right, and this is one thing I've always said to people, you've got to make sure, you know, it's, you know, when you're on the plane, they, you know, the masks come down, they always say, hey, make sure you put your mask on first before you help anybody else out, right? I believe that in life as well too. Make sure you have yourself right before you try helping other people out to get their life right, right? There's nothing more important than making sure you're right. And I think sometimes people look at that as, you know, being selfish. I, in fact, it's being quite opposite. I think it's, you know, making sure that you're right before you explain to somebody else how they should be able to do things. But the two things that it's always been for me, I've always been big into yoga. That helps me from a stretching and a physical standpoint. But the second thing that's really grounded me over the last few years that I've really gotten into is I love being outside. I think there's something healthy about being outside, and especially with today's day, I think way too many people are inside in general. But getting outside, right, getting away from everything, the social media, the gossip, the people, the news can be so negative at times, right? Just being out there. And so the one thing that gardening has taught me, just like a lot of things in life, is we want everything now, more, more, more. And with flowers and the fruit that I grow, I can want it faster, but it won't happen, right? And so good things do take time. And so it's really helped me, you know, develop patience. It's really helped me take more time and really put my craft into what I do, and it's balanced me out a lot more.
Amazing. I really like that. And I absolutely resonate with being outside more. And over the last couple of years, my wife and I equally have spent more time tending to our garden and trying to be an amateur landscaper. I'm very glad that is not my vocation. I think I'm a much better VC than landscape architect, if you would.
I'll have to come check out your garden sometime.
Yeah, yeah. So to wrap us up here, I just have some fun rapid fire. We'll give you two options. You effectively pick what's top of mind as soon as you hear it. So first up, okay. New York or San Francisco?
Oh, well, neither. New York.
Ship or plane?
Oh, wow. During the week, I'll say plane. But if I had to choose one, I'll go ship.
And then to wrap us up, books or TV?
Oh, man. The right answer here is book, but I'm going to say TV. I got a 2-year-old right now. I wish I had more time to read. And don't get me wrong, I still do. But we're really big into Disney Plus right now.
Oh, I totally get it. And I appreciate the candid responses there. But with that, Drew, appreciate you taking the time to share about your background, your perspectives on industry, as well as THIC and the Nolan story. And look forward to the continued success.
Yeah, no, really appreciate you guys having us on today and really appreciate the question. So anything else, just let us know, but really appreciate it. Thank you.
Cheers.
Thanks for listening. If you enjoyed this episode, leave us a 5-star review and tell us what you liked. And be sure to head over to podcast.dynamo.vc to keep up to date with our latest content or subscribe on the podcast platform of your choice. Until next time.